Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
All right, everybody, welcome in. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast, Episode 11, our roundtable edition of the Olympic Games and more. We will get to our writers in just a second, but the Awful Announcing Podcast is, of course, presented by our good friends over at Clip It. Download the Clip It app today on your Android or iOS device. You missed Fergie belt her heart out with a strange, very obscure rendition of the national anthem. Fear not. You have the Clip It app. You can send it to your family and friends, whoever you want to pass it along to. They are here for you. It's the number one way to send your favorite clips to your family and friends, only with the Clip It app and a proud sponsor of the Awful Announcing Podcast. Ben Heisler with you, and I am joined by three outstanding Awful Announcing writers and contributors, and you've heard them on the podcast all before. We will start with our good friend Andrew Buchholz. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, Ben, thanks for having me.
Joe Lucia is joining us as well. What's up, Joe?
Hello, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm well, and Matt Yoder is with us as well. What's up, Matty?
It's always a pleasure to be with you guys.
It is good to have you guys back on today for an Olympic roundtable, at least to start things off. The Olympics are in full swing over on NBC and their channels, and I think a good place to start would be going in, when we first had a roundtable conversation about expectations for the Olympics, I think it was maybe 2-3 weeks ago, I don't think any of us were going in thinking, yeah, you know what, this is going to be a really exciting Olympics. There felt like there was a big lack of juice going in. And a lot of people have actually been tuning in to the Olympic coverage. Ratings have been a little bit better than most people anticipated. Andrew, I'll start with you on this. What do you think the better ratings have been attributed to for NBC?
Yeah, I mean, there have been some things that have been good for them, for sure. It hasn't been a complete disaster the way that some thought it would. And I think part of that is there are a lot of good storylines. I mean, there's a lot of interesting athletes, some of who were very, very much expected, and some who weren't. I mean, I think it's interesting to see some of the storylines have developed around people like Red Gerard, who not a lot of Americans necessarily even knew that much about before these games, and yet he goes on to win gold. And I think it's been entertaining Olympics for some of the more out of nowhere stories like that. Obviously, there have been prominent athletes like Lindsey Vonn and Michaela Schifrin and so on too. But I think part of what's getting people to tune is the chance that on any night, anything crazy can happen.
Matt, what have you seen from Olympic coverage this year that maybe has stood out to you?
Well, it's been interesting to me just looking at the Olympics as a whole. When NBC came into these Olympics, they trumpeted that they'd have the most live Winter Olympics ever. And I think we all expected ratings to be down versus Sochi. That has held true. There's maybe been a bright spot here and there. But I think what has been really fascinating to me is these Olympics for NBC, for Team USA, have been carried by what you might consider to be more non-traditional Olympic sports. I mean, the X Games influence on the Olympics has been stronger this year, more so than ever. And I look back to the first week, what were the highlights? Red Gerard, Jamie Anderson, Chloe Kim, and Sean White. That's 4 of the 5 gold medals that have been won by Team USA to this point through what sports you'd normally associate with the X Games. And I just wonder if we get into the more traditional Olympic sports, Michaela Schifrin notwithstanding in the alpine skiing, do you see interest in the Olympics start to fade through this second week? With not really a huge presence in figure skating, the U.S. men are alive still in the hockey tournament, but it might take a miraculous run to get them to a gold medal. I just see interest kind of fading a little bit after you had that first week, which was tremendous. And to me, you had the breakout star of these games, Chloe Kim. And I know you have the sexual harassment allegations that kind of overshadow anything good that's happening in the event. But for Sean White, to me, that was the best moment of pure sporting theater, that gold medal run when he had to lay down such a massive score to take the gold and did it in his third and final run. that was the most exciting moment of the Olympics for me thus far.
Yeah, I'm with you, Matt. I think what made it so interesting was not only the actual building theater. I have this idea that when NBC said we're going to have the most live coverage that we've ever had, I think a lot of people looked at it from the perspective of, yeah, it's still South Korea, and what really is going to be coming out of it that's going to feel like it's a primetime coverage type of event. And Joe, I'll go to you for this. Do you feel like, you know, from what you've seen, that NBC has at least made it feel like, even though it's not prime time there, they've made the audience feel that it's still a major event going on?
I would say so, just because it's blanketing all of their networks and all of their coverage, and all the other non-NBC networks are kind of showing reverence. They're, you know, taking it back, airing reruns, not airing their usual shows. So really the Olympics are the focus. They're the one thing that you know will be on over the last week and the rest of this week. So I think it's a situation where, yeah, it might be not as popular as we've seen in the past, but still NBC is promoting it like it's the most live Olympics ever. It's going to be all over the place. And even though the time change is really bizarre, I mean, still we're seeing it all over the place, and there's not like a lot of spoiler issues like we've had to deal with in recent years.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see, because what has been NBC's mantra in the past? Tape everything, dress it up for prime time,
right,
put the Bob Costas spin on it, you know, reach middle America, all those cliches that we have associated with the Olympics for so many years. But now, as someone who has craved more live coverage from NBC, it's kind of weird for me to say this, that maybe they've gone too far in that direction. Because what have you seen over the past few nights? You've seen downhill training live in prime time. I mean, who is really sitting down for an hour and a half of downhill practice qualifying runs? It'd be like putting Daytona 500 practice or qualifying in prime time, and no one's really that interested in that. Same thing with, you know, the snowboard big air. You have all these qualification runs not happening for a medal live in prime time. Just, it seems like, so NBC can justify this most live prime time hours of Olympic coverage. So it's been kind of a weird hit and miss for me with NBC and this live coverage with some of the decisions they've made.
I'll throw this out to any of you guys. Is there a way for NBC to try and find common ground to be able to promote that there's going to be a ton of live coverage, but at the same time, know their audience and know what kicks in and know what means something to them? Because if the ratings are in fact better than the year before, I don't know whether you're going to, you know, attribute that to just a promising start or the X Games factor. But I wonder if there's a way that they can find a common ground to having both live coverage and also the ability to turn programming into high drama, high filled situations, so that you don't have one night that feels like what Shaun White did, when that used to be how it would feel all the time.
I mean, I think something they've done quite well this time around is, even when they're not showing things live, there are ways for people to see them live. They are streaming all these feeds through their app. And something that we've really run into before with previous Olympics is NBC blocking out events that they're planning to show later in primetime, and so, which really irritates US sports fans who have to see everyone in Canada and everywhere else tweeting about it before NBC dares to show them the result. I think they've done a much better job of that this time around. And I think that there are these live options. They're not as easy as TV, and I still have questioned some of their decisions about things that they're not showing live, especially when they on TV. But it's nice that there's some of these workarounds, and that there is the opportunity for the hardcore sports fans to go check that out. I think something else they've made some smart decisions in terms of the things that they are actually showing live. Obviously, there are a few questionable ones. I think Matt made a good point about the downhill training and so on, like how much value there really is in that. But one that stood out for me last night, actually, was the ice dance, which is something that previously NBC probably would have shown a good 30 minutes, an hour or best after a lot of the rest of the world had seen it. And you would have had just hordes of people angry at them on Twitter. You would have had all sorts of spoilers. This time around, they showed the important thing when it was happening, when people in other countries were talking about it. And I think that worked out really well for them. So I think they are sort of learning from some of the mistakes they've made in the past, and at the very least, offering options for people to check in on things live.
Yeah, and I think that just having the option is something that a lot of us more hardcore sports fans, media people, you know, those of us who follow these things way, way, way too closely, that's all we've ever asked for. I mean, if you're a huge curling nut like I am, you don't want to wait around till 5 Take p.m. About. On CNBC when you see the tape delay. You want to watch it now so you can now go on to the live stream, check it out in the morning, and follow along live. And I think just having that option is what we've always asked for from NBC. Now, I also think they've gotten unlucky a couple times. I mean, some adverse weather conditions have thrown off their schedule.
Sure.
Then just the sheer luck of what happened in the Alpine skiing event in the Super G with Esther, I think Ledecka, however you pronounce her last name, came from absolutely nowhere to win the gold medal. I mean, she's a snowboarder that won a gold medal in the skiing competition. And NBC basically said, okay, these last X number of skiers, nobody out of them has a chance to win. So we're just going to leave this competition by. And then you come back as like, oh, whoops, sorry. One of them actually won something that was a 1 in a million chance coming in. Oh, well, we missed it. Like, you just can't do anything about that aside from the weird structure of the sport sending out its worst skiers last. I think we can microanalyze some of the scheduling decisions all the way throughout the Olympics. To me, I can at least get behind the idea of showing more stuff live, making more stuff available live, and just letting the chips fall where they may from there.
Do you guys have a favorite story that stood out over the course of the previous week plus of Olympic coverage? And I'll start with any of you on this.
I mean, I think for me, there's a really interesting contrast. I love the story of PETA, and I can't say his last name, but the Tonga guy who took up cross-country skiing, got so much attention the last Summer Olympics for his Taekwondo, and especially for the shirtless opening ceremony thing. And he has a really cool story. He's a really interesting guy. He took up skiing in a country with no snow, really pursued this dream, and then did what he set out to do and finished ahead of legit cross country skiers who had a whole lot of advantages on him. And I think that's a cool story because it shows really the good side of what the Olympics can be and how it's not just about the medals. And sometimes I think sometimes we lose sight of that and we all focus just on who's standing atop the podium and not all the best other stories that are out there. But then to me, the really interesting flip side of that is Liz Sweeney, this American who traveled the world, started competing for Hungary in the half pipe. And what's hilarious there is, like, she doesn't even do the sport. She glides down this half pipe. She does no tricks. She just pops up above the rim a little bit. And then she goes and gives an interview of, oh, well, I'm disappointed I didn't make the final. And it's really fascinating to compare and contrast those two stories of how there can be all these great Olympic moments from these athletes who you'd never expect to be there, people who are inspiring, people who are maybe opening up the realm for further Winter Olympic participation. And then you've got a few just incredibly rich people whose goal was to say, oh, I got to without actually doing the sport.
I think that story has inspired me. I mean, the four of us surely can find some common ancestry from like Namibia or Papua New Guinea or somewhere, so we could do a four-man bobsled team. I mean, I think that's our pathway to the Olympics.
I think it would be better if we just put ourselves together and became like the Mexican curling team.
I'm 100% on board.
Speaking of curling, I think that's my story. I mentioned, you know, I think the Olympics and NBC, they do such a great job going all in on the curling. And I got hooked, gosh, 12, 16 years ago, probably, when they really started going all in on the curling every night on CNBC. And if you follow that along closely, this redemption story of John Schuster, the American skip, when you look at the huge upset of Canada, sorry, Andrew, and then today, another big win over Switzerland, they basically have to win their last three games to make the medal round. And Schuster has kind of been the punching bag of Team USA for the last two Olympics. He has not curled well, especially in clutch moments. Struggled a bit early in these games, but that huge upset win over Canada, he curled, I think, something like 96, 97% today against Switzerland. So if they win their last game against Great Britain, they advance to the medal round. And after they beat Canada, he gave this tear-filled interview on NBC, which to me was maybe the most moving moment of the Olympics, because here's a guy whose only exposure on the national scene has been like watching Greg Norman on the back nine of Augusta for the last two Olympiad. And writing this redemption tale, even if they don't make the medal round, for him to beat Canada, get some of these clutch wins under his belt, has been really, really great to see. And I think the other one, if you go from a big picture macro point of view, I hope I'm not overstating this and living in the moment and the hype too much, but I think Chloe Kim can be to the Winter Olympics over the next 12 years what Michael Phelps has been to the Summer Olympics. I mean, she has the charisma. She has the style. She dominates her sport. She's a gold medal lock for the next three or four Olympics, probably. And she can do, I think, similar things for the Winter Olympics, what Phelps and Usain Bolt and other stars have done in the summer. I think she's been that big of a deal this year, and the potential is just limitless.
One other thing I'd just add on the curling is I think curling this year has been a great Olympic story and has really shown the value of increased participation and that the status quo is not always going to remain the same. For so long, Canada has dominated men's and women's curling at the Olympics, and the Canadian teams this time around, the rest of the world has caught up to them. Rachel Holman and Kevin Cooey, their rinks have struggled, and there's been a national curling crisis in the Canadian media coverage and in all of Canadian Twitter freaking out about this. But a big part of it is just the rest of the world getting better and people like John Schuster and his rink sort of really turning a corner and becoming legitimate competitors on this stage. And I think that's something that needs to be kept in mind in the debates about things like women's hockey. Is sure, it may be one or two countries dominating it right now, but that doesn't mean that's going to be the case forever.
This is your home for the curling podcast on the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Ben, we could do an entire 2 hours.
I might just step away and let you and Andrew just take complete reign and go for it. I will say this, though. If the Americans end up getting the gold and they turn it into a Disney movie, they can call it Schuster's Millions. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap up my curling point there. I do want to move on to one aspect of the Olympics that I think we all can really relate to for seeing him over the course of time. And we've all become very accustomed to Bob Costas and being in the main room and having the fire going. And Bob would take us out to whatever events. And Mike Tirico has done a very nice job. And I don't think any of us ever doubted the level of professionalism that Tirico would bring. But when you're replacing somebody like Costas, I think a lot of times it's very easy for people to go in and say, all right, well, good luck. But I think he's done a really nice job. And he's certainly looking like he's somebody that can be in that chair for a long time.
I think the situation with Costas is that, sure, he had been around for seemingly forever doing this, but he was a very polarizing personality, especially towards the end. So I think a lot of people were really just grateful for him to move on and to see a guy like Tirico come in and really not miss a beat, kind of taking that hosting gig up to the next level. I think that was the breath of fresh air that everyone really wanted with Costas getting finally booted after all these years.
It's really interesting to me and a little weird because that Olympic primetime gig has so much hype and so much attention to it. And you are really in reality on the air for such little time during primetime coverage. All you really have to do is get in and get out. It's a couple interviews here and there, and it's the transitions between the sports. Here's the medal count. Here's the American athlete we're looking for. And if you've seen Mike Tirico at all in his 25 years at ESPN, I think from what he's done with hosting golf to hosting soccer, the World Cup to basketball, football, you name it, I don't think there was any doubt in my mind that the transition from Coxes to Tirico would be nothing but incredibly smooth. And I think he's done a fine job. There's not really too much you can do in that role just by the nature of the beast to really expand upon what Costas had done the last 20 some odd years. But I think Tirico's done fine this go around.
Andrew?
Well, it's interesting to me because I think Tirico handles it quite differently than Costas. Matt is right that there's only so much that you can do with that. But I feel in the last few Olympics in particular, there were always times where Bob Costas made it very much about him and about his thoughts on the political situation, on the hosting country, on whatever. I mean, it was very much sort of, it often became a very sort of narrative essay driven thing of putting his opinions on it out there. And Mike Tirico has not done that. I think Mike Tirico has really made it sort of about everyone else and really focused on it being about the sports, on it being about whoever he's interviewing, about getting it out to the different commentators and so on. And I think that's something that sort of reflects NBC's larger coverage of these Olympics compared to what I've seen from them in the past. They're still doing all the storylines. They're still doing all the drama. But I feel like this has been an Olympics where it's been maybe geared a little bit more towards sports fans and to it being about the sports rather than just about whatever storyline they're trying to advance at the moment or whatever larger thing there is going on. And obviously there's still been some of that too. Their opening ceremony coverage took some deserved criticism on that front. But I think a big part of Tirico's hosting is making it about the sports and making it not about him. And I think that's worked pretty well for him.
And that may be the biggest surprise to me overall from these Olympics is that the global political climate and everything going on in South Korea, North Korea, and the United States, once we got past the opening ceremonies mm-hmm. and Mike Pence, the United Korea team coming in, really hasn't been a factor for these games. And maybe to Andrew's point, that focus on the games, on the athletes, Tirico spent 25 years at ESPN doing just that. And I don't think, like Bob Costas, he's really one to step outside of that lane so much. So maybe that has come and coincided with what we've seen so far in Pyeongchang.
Yeah, and maybe we're not being fair to Costas either, because I think you know that when you bring him in, and for somebody who has been as outspoken as Costas has been over the course of his career, I know it's been a little bit more on the later side than not, but I think you kind of know that going in, and you know that sure. Bob is going to speak up at times where he feels like he has the voice and the platform to be able to do so. Having said that, though, I think you're spot on with Tirico, and that sort of leads me to my next question. I actually do want to come back to Tirico for one other thing when it comes to sort of the future of some of the broadcast booths in the NFL, which we'll get to in just a second. But I want to go back to NBC's coverage as a whole, because early on, they were heavily criticized for their lack of coverage when it came to Shaun White and the sexual assault allegations against him. And also the idea that Kim Jong-un's sister was sort of paraded around like a folk hero in a sense, and that upset a lot of people as well. I guess for NBC, and I'll sort of throw this to all of you guys because I think it's a fairly open-ended question, what is NBC's responsibility as a news organization while also maintaining their right to put on an Olympic coverage that doesn't necessarily combine those two aspects together? Does that make sense?
The Olympics are a really weird beast because they're kind of always tied to something political or something going on in the world just because of how it's like a worldwide event. And it's really tough for any network to juggle everything going on. And I think that after NBC got all that criticism the first 2 days, I think they kind of had to just take a step back and realize, okay, we're getting kind of pilloried for doing things the way we're doing it. I think we should kind of just try to make this as milquetoast as possible so nobody can really complain about anything. And whether or not that's the best way to do things, it really has resulted in a lack of controversy over the last week or so.
You guys agree?
It's always a fine line that you have to walk, I think, especially in the Olympics. You have to make viewers aware. I think you have to have that responsibility to not run and hide from something like the Shaun White harassment allegations. But how much do you, do you say something when he's in the middle of his half pipe run or when the gold medal winning score comes down? I don't know if you go that far, but I think you at least have the journalistic responsibility to make viewers aware, who may only know Shaun White every 4 years, of what's going on behind the scenes, what's been going on in his life. Because you have, for instance, with these harassment allegations, you have this Me Too movement that is sweeping the nation, that is relevant, that brings that story even more to the forefront. So it is a very fine line when you have, as Joe said, this mixture of cultural and political and sporting worlds that seem to always come together in the Olympics, whether it's Pyeongchang or Rio or Sochi, and even in the World Cup too. I think when you have these big global events, the World Cup's coming to Russia this summer. What kind of stories will Fox run with what's going on there? Qatar, 4 years down the road.
Yeah, absolutely.
Loads of stories there that have already been done, continue to be done, and will be done in the future. So it's always a fine line, I think, in trying to balance those.
And I also misspoke. I meant to say harassment versus sexual assault. But Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, I think by this point, we know that NBC is not going to go in really hard on anything serious about Olympic athletes. I think we saw that in the last Olympic Games. And I think, honestly, there's a lot of things that they can be criticized for with the Shaun White thing, but it's nowhere near the level of their botching of the Ryan Lochte story the last time around, of having Matt Lauer on primetime TV relaying what Ryan Lochte told him, and just the unbelievable ways that they screwed that up in so
not
many.
Not one piece of that has aged well, by the way.
You're not
Lochte
kidding.
And Lauer.
No, not at all. And I think what's interesting to me with the White thing is, yeah, you can. I think there's a lot of fair criticisms of them for not bringing it up at all. I think they maybe have a bit of a defense in that this is stuff that was out there, was reported on long before the Olympics. So it's not like the Lochte thing where it's something that arose during the Olympics. And I think the challenge for them too is in relation to what Joe said about this, the Olympics involving so many different countries and so many political things. I think it's important to keep in mind too that the Olympics are and the Olympic broadcast of NBC in particular is for a whole lot of different people. It's for the hardcore sports fans. It's for the people who want the results, who want the news. And it's also for the people who don't care about any of that and want the uplifting flag clad stories. And so whatever they did with White, they were going to get some criticism. The way they handled it, they got criticism from the journalists out there, from some of the sports fans out there. But if they'd done it the other way, they would have been pilloried by the people who only wanted to see good stories about Olympic athletes and why are you bringing up this old accusation? So I think it was a misstep on their part. They probably could have done something with it somewhere, but it's also something that's really hard for them to take the lead on, given that position that they're in. And I think that where really we have seen the lead on the Shaun White coverage is in some of the questions that print journalists tried to ask at his press conference,
right,
in the way that eventually prompted a statement and an apology from him. I think that's coverage that should happen. It absolutely should be at least acknowledged by the broadcaster, but I think it's often going to be not the official broadcaster that's leading the way on those stories, just because they are more touchy and they are going to offend a lot of people. And I think there's a responsibility to at least pay some attention to them. So you can criticize NBC there, but I don't think you can really expect NBC to go hard-hitting journalism,
sure,
because we've seen how horribly that's worked out for them in the past.
Yeah, and just to tag that really quick before we move on, I think NBC had the opportunity to acknowledge it. They ran a feature, mm-hmm, on Shaun White before the event with Mike Tirico hosting the coverage, and I think if all they'd done was acknowledge the sexual harassment reports, just even as a quick tag at the end of the story, I think they would have done the viewers that justice by mentioning it and saying it is a part of the conversation currently of the Olympics. And I think once that was acknowledged, then I think you would have gone away from the awkwardness that ended up being at the press conference and also on the Today Show on the next day, or I suppose later on that night. I think a lot of people just wanted NBC to acknowledge that the story existed as opposed to just pretending it didn't exist until there was no longer an option to do so. I want to move on. We got a few minutes left. I mentioned Mike Tirico sort of leads us into our next point, and it goes to an NFL topic, as now Fox is going to have the Thursday Night Football broadcast, and they still haven't decided who is ultimately going to be calling games for them. And now there are reports that Sean McDonough may not remain the play-by-play voice for Monday Night Football for ESPN. That's not confirmed, but it's still very much open in the air. So we'll go right down the table. Andrew, Joe, Matt, is there somebody in mind that you have for either of those networks that you would like to see in those roles for either Thursday night or Monday night?
Yeah, not. I don't think really. I think a Thursday night option I'm quite intrigued by is I wouldn't mind seeing Kevin Burkhardt get it. I mean, I think he's done a very good job of everything he's been asked to do at Fox. He's had a really impressive rise there over the last couple of years, and I think he always does a very solid job on the play-by-play front. I really don't have much of an idea who they're going to go with as an analyst. I really hope that isn't Peyton Manning. I don't think the world needs more Peyton Manning. And I don't think that Peyton Manning is really going to give it what you need to in order to be a successful primetime broadcaster. But you never know. Maybe they do that. Maybe it works out great. I'd rather see them sort of make maybe a smaller splash, so, and go with a couple of people who have been working their way up here rather than just try to throw in the likes of a Peyton Manning.
And maybe the Joe Davis route, someone along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of merit to just some of the guys who have some experience rather than just try, oh, CBS got Tony Romo and that worked out great, so everybody should copy that.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Andrew. I'd like to see either Kevin Burkhardt or Joe Davis end up getting the gig. They seem like the guys Fox is kind of grooming to be their, I don't want to say a successor to Joe Buck, because Joe Buck is still relatively young by broadcaster terms, so he's not going anywhere anytime soon. But those are the guys that they seem to be putting a lot of stock in for the future as their longtime broadcasters, replacing the likes of Dick Stockton, who is getting kind of up there. I see a lot of people also mentioning Gus Johnson, but let's be honest here. Gus Johnson hasn't really called NFL games and quite a few years regularly, and I really don't know if you kind of tagged him as the voice of your big primetime game with Joel Klatt, what would it say about the college football games that they're promoting if they take their number one broadcast team and throw them on the NFL? I think that would create a less coherent broadcast if they have them do games on Thursday and Saturday.
For Fox, I think I would love to see Burkhardt as the play-by-play guy. I think he's earned it with his work over the last few years. Analysts is a lot harder to predict because Fox has shuffled their lineup so many times over the last couple of years. To me, I would go with Chris Spielman and or Charles Davis. I think those of the Fox analysts are the best bets. I think both do great work, and I think both could be plugged in either as a solo analyst or maybe you even try and experiment with a three-man booth and put them together. What that would do to the rest of Fox's lineup, yeah, maybe that remains to be seen, but I'm kind of with Andrew. I don't really see a need to go get Peyton Manning just for that Thursday primetime coverage. If you're looking at ESPN, though, and I know you brought up Sean McDonough, Ben, I can't see anyone else really calling NFL games on ESPN for Monday Night Football. I mean, I've seen some of the names thrown around. Steve Levy, I have a hard time seeing it. Joe Tessitore, he's so, I think, synonymous with the college game at this point.
I'm with you, yeah.
That'd be a tough switch. So I just don't know. ESPN, it used to be a situation where you could look down their bench of play-by-play guys and see 5, 6, 7, 8 individuals who could be plugged into any spot of the network, and you'd say, oh, well, yeah, I could see that happening. But, you know, maybe Dave Pasch, maybe Bob Wischusen. I think Pasch, if you're looking at Sean McDonough, definitely.
And both of those guys are local NFL radio play-by-play guys as well.
Yeah, and I think with Pasch, his profile has been lifted, calling games with Bill Walton, doing you know, top line college football games, as Wischusen does as well. But his extra work across college basketball, the NBA, I think I would go in that direction. But really, overall, I think it would make more sense to leave McDonough there because, again, looking at the Monday Night Football analyst spot, is anyone really excited for Matt Hasselbeck? I mean, I don't know if Tim Hasselbeck is excited for that. So maybe that's the network that needs to go with the splashy hire. I think we talked about that on the last podcast. But now, to me, Fox, you've got, and this is kind of crazy to say, but I think you've got a bit of a deeper roster now at Fox of football announcers than you might have at ESPN at this point, at least when it comes to the NFL.
We're talking splashy hires for ESPN. Can I just say, let's put Dave Pasch and Bill Walton on Monday Night
Football. I think I might be able to one-up you. You guys
that
know
that would be a mega cast every single week. I would love it.
I think I might be able to one-up you here, Andrew, and it's not going to be easy. You already know that there's rumored interest in Peyton Manning, and you know that this guy was supposed to be on the Fox number two or number three team last year. Peyton Manning and Jay Cutler, players only Thursday night broadcast. Boom. How do you not watch?
That would be the odd couple of football analyst tandems if there ever was
one. It would
one.
Be such a train wreck that you couldn't keep your eyes off of it.
You know, I'm really curious to see if Jay Cutler ever gets another broadcasting job or if he completely burned his bridges with that. Because, I mean, clearly there was something there, right? I mean, there was something that Fox saw in him that they're like, yeah, we love this guy. We're going to make him our number two guy. And so, I mean, he certainly got name recognition. He's quotable at the least, but then he did this whole thing of leaving them right before the season to go back to the NFL. So I'm really curious to see what his future holds when he does decide to hang up his cleats.
My guess is that he will be welcomed back with open arms if that's how they felt about him before. I think they'll welcome him back regardless. And by the way, for any of you guys that are looking for a fun Instagram follow, there's a Instagram account that is not run by Jay. I think it's called If Jay Had Instagram, and it's run by his wife. And it's just all the stuff that if Jay Cutler was on Instagram, it would be the stuff he'd be posting and sending out there. It's an outstanding follow. Highly recommend it. Andrew Buchholz, Joe Lucia, Matt Yoder, read their fine work over at awfulannouncing.com and follow them on Twitter as well. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you all for listening to this edition of the Roundtable Conversation. My name is Ben Heisler. This has been the Awful Announcing Podcast presented by the good folks over at Clip It. We will be back hopefully in the next week or so with another big name guest and possibly a surprise interviewer as well. Thank you all for listening. Have a great rest of your day.